Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
The rich man owns rivers of gold. You don't know what it's worth. But the meek and the purest of heart, they will inherit this earth. So blow on, blessing wind. Blow on, blessing wind. Blessing wind.
Bill Miller of Wisconsin Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican Indians getting us underway today on Route 51 as we look ahead to an event that's happening October 14th in Nakusa, an event called the New People Environmental Summit. I'm Glenn Moberg. The summit is named after an old Ojibwe story about the end of the world as we know it, and a new people comprised not just of Native Americans, but people of all races, nations, and tribes. The new people have to choose between two paths, a paved road of industry and development, and a dirt trail. They choose the trail and save the environment and the earth. The New People Environmental Summit takes place in the Ho-Chunk Casino Banquet Center in Nakusa. It's sponsored by Clean Green Action of Wisconsin Rapids. With us today, a member of that organization, summit organizer David Gorski. We also have John Greendeer, president of the Ho-Chunk Nation Development of Heritage Preservation. And Sandy Goki should be joining us shortly. She's a teacher with the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. You'll also be hearing today from keynote speaker Kim Wright of Midwest Environmental Advocates, Paul DeMaine, CEO of Indian Country Communications, and self-described Native American Ambassador Art Shigoni. And as always, we invite you to join the conversation. If you have questions for our guests, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on our website, wpr.org/route51. Well, David Gorski and John Greendeer, thanks so much for being with us today. And we really appreciate you traveling to Wausau to join us, and we hope to be catching up with Sandy Goki of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, shortly. David, the summit is being sponsored by Clean Green Action of Wisconsin Rapids. You're a member of that organization. Tell us what you do.
Well, Clean Green Action is an organization that supports a sustainable community through education, recycling, and conservation projects. And you can visit our website at cleangreenaction.org.
So you're a nonprofit. Why sponsor this upcoming summit on October 14th?
Well, we are about sustainability and protection of the environment. And the idea of the summit is Native American people throughout their history have known how to live in harmony with the earth. And it's something that the rest of us need to learn. And as it says on one of our Save the Date cards, we're trying to bring Native people and the rest of us together in the protection of the environment for the next seven generations.
Tell us about what's going to be happening there. You've got a number of speakers. Mm-hmm. You're offering food. There'll be music.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to start off with a drum circle. I've heard when the drums play, good things happen. We have Richard Walker from the Ho-Chunk tribe, and his group will be there. And then Art Shigoni will show a short video about the New People movement. And then we're going to start off with Paul DeMaine from Indian Country News, who has been involved with the protection of our water for a long time. Kimberly Wright is our keynote speaker. She is the executive director of Midwest Environmental Advocates. She's going to talk about using the law to protect our environment. We have John Greendeer, who's in the studio with us today, and he's going to give us the Native American philosophy regarding the protection of the environment. And then we have Julie De La Terra, who's an environmental science scientist who graduated from the Gaylord School of Environmental Studies in Madison. And she's going to talk about moving from landscaping to foodscaping. And then we have music by Skip Jones and Frank Montano. And we also have Bobby G from the Central Wisconsin Greens Party talking about regional electric power transportation.
And you're offering food as well?
Yes. Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that because we have a deadline date on the registration if you want to eat a meal. That's October 3rd. And in order to do that, you need to go to this website, www.show, and that's spelled T-I-X, the number 4, the letter U.com. That's www.showticksforyou.com. And it's going to be a really good meal. We have traditional native food, including wild rice from the Lac-Couturier Reservation. We have ancient squash that's a seed that was found some time ago outside of Green Bay in a clay ball, and they dated the seeds to be 800 years old. They're growing in my backyard right now. We're gonna have smoky squash soup. We're going to have white corn from the Oneida Nation, and I've come to find out that the Oneida Nation sells their white corn all over the country to different Native American tribes. Also, buffalo, cranberry dish, and more. So register by October 3rd. Otherwise, you can just come the day of for $5 and just enter, you know, just pay the admission fee and come right in. But you can go to our Facebook page, Clean Green Action Facebook page, and you will see an ad for the Environmental Summit there. But only thing you really need to do is go to Show Ticks for You and register.
All right. Sounds good. And John Greendeer, you're president of the Department of Heritage Preservation for the Ho-Chunk Nation. What's the purpose of that department and what do you do?
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, and thanks for having us here today. I'll just make one small correction. I am the executive director of Heritage Preservation, and okay. I am appointed by the president. And it's I'm really happy to be a part of this event. And as you can see, listen from Dave, that this is an incredible lineup. And for anyone that's ever planned any public event, there's a lot of things that go into making sure these come off really successfully. So my hat's off to David and his planners and organizers. The Ho-Chunk Nation has held the environmental concerns at a really high priority. And, you know, I think right now during this particular part of the year, those of us who are cognizant of what's going on around, we're harvesting our corn. We're going out and harvesting rice. The deer hunting has started, you know, trapping, and a lot of, you know, our tobacco is being harvested. Mm-hmm. And so we have this incredible appreciation for this. And I don't think we always take enough time to recognize how important our land and our environment really are. And so for this reason, the New People Summit will actually showcase how indigenous and you know, other folks have adjusted to the climate, to the regions, and how they have survived and done their best to not try to alter the environment to change to their liking, which is what we're seeing and probably one of the biggest reasons why this gathering is taking place.
And you're going to be speaking about environmental protection from a Native American point of view. How do Native Americans look at the issue of environmental protection?
Well, I really feel like a lot of times what we're doing on the front lines is promoting common sense. We understand that we live in this Western culture and that we are consumers of fossil fuels, and we also have GMO-based foods and diets. But I don't know how far is too far. I wanted to believe as a young person that you know, when we started seeing the landscape changing, or when it became dangerous for us to eat fish or breathe air at certain times of the day during production, that would be enough to convince people to really be sensible and scale back. However, what we're seeing is a trend to go further into the development and actually create habitats that are unlivable. And so I believe that we have really done our best to draw a line and say this is where the standard is. And as far as American Indian culture goes, you know, we can't do anything without our environment, without our four-leggeds, without, you know, our tobacco, our corn. So these things are important to our whole way of life, and we believe that what is taking place threatens every aspect of those elements that we've come to cherish for thousands of years.
And I believe we've established contact with Sandy Gokey. Sandy, you're a teacher with the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, but you told me you look at yourself more simply as part of the Ojibwe Nation.
Yeah, that's correct. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Sandy.
And why is that? Why are you kind of resisting the compartmentalization of being a member of the Red Cliff Band or the Bad River Band? You consider yourself just an Ojibwe.
I consider myself Ojibwe and not so much part of one band or another, because when I look back at my relatives, my ancestors, excuse me, They're from all over our territory. I have grandparents from Keweenaw Bay, from Fond du Lac, from Bad River, all these areas. We weren't a stationary people. So this entire territory is where I'm from.
Now, you described yourself to me as a mother, daughter, sister, and water protector. What do you mean by water protector, and why is that important?
In our way of being, the women's element is the water. We carry our children in water for 9 months, and it's our duty as women in Anishinaabe culture to care for the water and to protect the water. And only women do water ceremonies and things like that. We share that power with our men, and men, their element is fire. So not only that, but where I'm sitting right now, I'm in Ashland, Wisconsin, looking down the street here at a Superfund site. And just as a human being, as somebody who's dependent on water, it's my duty to ensure that my kids and their grandkids and their grandkids can have that water too.
David, I understand that it was a conversation with Sandy that led you to come up with the idea for the summit.
Yes, I don't know if Sandy remembers, but Paul DeMaine put on an event a couple years ago called You Talk, We Listen, and I met Sandy at that event. And she mentioned the Anishinaabe prophecy of the seven fires and the idea of the new people. And I thought it'd be a great name for a summit and really an opportunity to bring Native American people and the rest of us together in the protection of the environment.
Well, Sandy, since it was your telling of that story that led to this summit, why don't you share it again with us here in the studio and all the listeners on Wisconsin Public Radio?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Before I start, though, I want to acknowledge my ancestors and the ones who saw this vision. And in my retelling of this story, I want to acknowledge that maybe I might make a mistake or two and ask the ancestors to kind of have pity on me for that. So,
well, we all make mistakes.
Back. Oh, I'm sorry. What?
But we all make mistakes, and I frequently ask my ancestors to forgive me too. So I think we're in good company.
Most definitely. A while back, actually 7 generations ago, this person had a dream, and they saw that the humans, that we have two paths that we can take. One path is a paved path, and it's got skyscrapers and paved roads and sidewalks, and it's kind of looking like where we're at now. And to continue this path will inevitably destroy us all, not just humans, but all the plants and animals as well. So we have a choice. We can either take that path, or we can take a step back and go the other way on this unbeaten trail, kind of. We can make our own trail and live with the other beings in this world. And by doing that, we all have this choice as individuals. And we can all do our best to make this choice. And those who make that choice to walk on this nature trail, I'll call it, those of us who do our best to live that way, this next flood is going to come. And I call it a flood because that's just the last reference we've had for this new beginning of the world. So during this next flood, those who continued to live in a good way and respect all living beings will be set aside. And it's not just going to be Anishinaabe people. It's going to be all people who walk this way.
Are you talking literally about the end of the world?
You know, I guess I don't particularly know. If you look at what's happening around us in the whole world, kind of seems that way, but I wouldn't call it like the end of the world, maybe a new beginning.
You know, there's a flood part of the narrative, and I find that interesting. Just about every culture on the planet Earth has a flood story from the distant past.
Most definitely. And, you know, one of the teachings I received from a just wonderful elder of mine was that all creation stories are true. And that's one way that we can bridge a gap between us, is to acknowledge that everybody's creation story is true. And that flood story of ours is a recreation story when the world was recreated. And like you said, that all across the world, that story is told. So I'm guessing it's most likely true.
John Greendeer, your take on the new people story.
Well, I think, and thank you, Sandy, she's absolutely spot on. And I think that it goes in line with generational thinking of what we're doing. The things that Sandy and her folks are doing aren't there to benefit themselves. They're there for a lot longer than what people think. They're for generations. And I think that when we go back to thinking generationally through seven generations, we actually start thinking of the small impacts that we have, the small direction changes that we go on, and where that's going to end up leading. And so for us, and I'm glad that the New People's Summit really addresses this difference that we have. Some people will homogenize environmentalists and American Indian advocates and social justice workers on the same thread, and that's not always the case. They're not polar by any means, but the generational thinking that drives the indigenous communities is unique. And I point this out because we're not just people. We're sovereign nations, and that's different than being a nonprofit organization or an individual or a group or a corporation. We are leaders of the free nation, indigenous nations. And so I think it's really important that we also look at the democracy on this side, the government aspect of this as well, and saying that, you know, I don't want to see my president, my representative sitting in a 3-minute window at some town hall giving their take on a piece of legislation. We are unique, and I think when we come forward, we also have the ability to look at options that are not available to organizations and groups of folks that are looking to leave a good mark. And that means, you know, whether it's developing our own standards through treatment estate or to go further as to develop some more incorporate more of our heritage into our daily cultural practices that are long-term sustainable, that do look at those seven generations as well.
And seven generations, you're talking about what we do today, we should view it not only in terms of how it's going to affect short-term profits and the bottom line for the next quarter. We should view it as how it's going to affect people seven generations from now.
Absolutely. And I think that there's always a look at the balance of job creation and a stronger economy, because I think that and a lot of times they help us to have education and opportunity. But the reality is some of the things that we do aren't there to stifle a political party or to stop corporations from generating revenue. They're simply just there to make sure that we have a generation that will be safe in the future.
Keynote speaker Kim Wright of Midwest Environmental Advocates will be talking about using the law to protect the environment at the summit. Kim was a guest on Route 51 2 weeks ago. Let's hear what she had to say about the state of the environment in Wisconsin.
I just have to respond to that our environment is getting cleaner year after year. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Wisconsin has been a leader in implementing and enforcing the Clean Air, the Clean Water Act. When the federal law was passed, they actually tapped DNR staff and UW scientists to write the implementing regs. We are in trouble with the EPA. Our Clean Water Act programs are we are not issuing technically sufficient permits. We're not monitoring and enforcing those permits. There was an independent study by the Legislative Audit Bureau that showed that DNR is following its own rules as little as 4% of the time. It's been widely reported that enforcement is significantly down under the Walker DNR. And what was really shocking to me when I heard these statistics is that even things like fish and game regulations are down. So hunting deer outside of the season dropped 85%, those citations. We have more and more impaired waters. We've got landscape-scale destruction with frac sand mining that the state has basically abdicated the responsibility to regulate. So, I mean, this is what I see up close every day are, the threats to public health and the threats to our environmental commons from lack of enforcement of existing laws.
That's Kim Wright of Midwest Environmental Advocates. She'll be the keynote speaker at the New People Environmental Summit October 14th in Nakusa. Sandy, your reaction to what you just heard from Kim Wright?
My reaction is she is spot on. I look even up here in northern Wisconsin, and granted this isn't Wisconsin DNR's jurisdiction, but it's the National Forest Service. We have an Enbridge pipeline going through the National Forest that is 4 years expired on its permit, has been operating without a permit for 4 years, and the Forest Service is considering renewing the permit. There, in this area here, tribal status is unique because we have off-reservation hunting, fishing, and gathering rights on public land. And what the DNR isn't taking into consideration is that they're putting at risk resources that don't belong to them, that don't even belong to Wisconsin state citizens. They belong to Lake Superior Chippewa Nation, and they aren't giving us the weight that we actually have.
Buzz writes into our Wisconsin Public Radio Route 51 website, and he's asking, is there any industrial use of natural resources that Native Americans support? And if so, at what scale? John Greendeer.
Well, I think we have a unique perspective living in the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a strong environmental advocacy. So if you're going to come to do business and secure minerals, you're going to have a mountain to climb. The farther west you go, though, you will actually see a lot of tribes that are industrialized and do a lot of mining. In Wisconsin, not so much. We have freshwater aquifers that we exclusively enjoy in our nation, and never thought we'd have to be at the front lines for protection of those. But when you start getting out into the western tribes, the West Coast and Alaskan tribes, a lot of those tribes, you know, do a lot of mining and oil excavation. So it's a little bit different perspective regionally. So yes, there are tribes that have done so as well, taking advantage.
David Gorski, we're talking about the political response to environmental concerns. You ran for the state assembly as a Democrat in the 72nd district a couple of years ago against Republican Scott Krug. Are you planning on running again?
Yes, I'm running again in 2018. Mm-hmm. Right. In fact, right after the summit, probably within a couple of weeks, I'll announce my candidacy publicly and have my first meet and greet.
All right. Well, you heard it here first. We're talking about the New People Environmental Summit, which takes place October 14th at the Ho-Chunk Banquet Center in Nakusa. And our guests are summit organizer David Gorski of Clean Green Action of Wisconsin Rapids, also John Greendeer of the Ho-Chunk Nation Department of Heritage Preservation, and Sandy Gokey, a teacher with the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Chippewa. I'm Glenn Moberg. We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We're going to take a short break. Here's Joe Walsh.
We are living on a dying planet. We're killing everything that's alive. And anyone who tries to deny it wears a tie and gets paid to lie. So I wrote these songs for a dying planet. I'm sorry, but I'm telling the truth. And for everybody trying to save it, these songs are for you, too.
Support for WPR comes from Sculpture Milwaukee, turning downtown Wisconsin Avenue into a walkable outdoor urban art gallery. On view now through October 22nd from O'Donnell Park to 6th Street. More at sculpturemilwaukee.com. Support also comes from Christine Bremer Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Let's pray Menominee River, wash the sleep from their eyes. Let them see and feel your beauty. Let them read between their own lies. Because our children need clean water to plant another seed. Yeah, yeah. Let the power of the people pack and send them downstream.
That's Wade Fernandez of the Menominee Tribe of Wisconsin with his song Blues for the Menominee River, a commentary on plans to put a sulfide mine along the riverbanks in the Upper Peninsula. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we're talking about the New People Environmental Summit, which takes place October 14th at the Ho-Chunk Banquet Center in Nakusa, with summit organizer David Gorski of Clean Green Action of Wisconsin Rapids, John Greendeer of the Ho-Chunk Nation Department of Heritage Preservation, and Sandy Goki, a teacher with the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question or comment on our website, wpr.org/route51. I'd like our guests to comment on Wade Fernandez's song, Blues for the Menominee River. How big of a threat, John Greendeer, do you consider that proposed Back 40 sulfide mine in the Upper Peninsula?
The proposed mine is absolutely devastating. There is no apologies and there's no reclamation for the impacts of that mine, especially to the Menominee people and anyone south of that. This is simply not a simple tribal issue. Everyone is threatened by this, and the proliferation of more of these is imminent in the event that these go through. So I'm really glad that the Menominee have really stood up and made their concerns known.
There's a bill pending before the state legislature that would end the moratorium on sulfide mining in Wisconsin. Supporters of that legislation point to the Flambeau mine in Ladysmith as an example of how sulfide mining can be done safely.
hey, there you go. Sandy, this one's all yours. Your region.
Okay. So for the Flambeau mine, they have a 1,200-foot buffer zone where they can have unlimited pollution. And there's already an impaired water. They call it Stream C, which is adjacent to the Flambeau mine, which runs into the Flambeau River. So to say that it is a safe and has no pollution is just straight out lying.
Well, supporters of this legislation also point to our state's long history of mining, the fact that we even have a miner on the state flag. Tom Tiffany, who's a Republican state senator of Hazelhurst, says it's time to put the miner back to work. David Gorski, how do you argue with people who say those mining jobs could pay $85,000 a year? And we're talking about some impoverished areas in northern Wisconsin. Why not put the miners back to work?
Well, I think we should take the long view. you know, Wisconsin, and Sandy and John can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Wisconsin means the gathering of water. And so here in Wisconsin, we have abundance of water. And you just look around the world right now, the water, you know, the water is becoming more and more precious, and we need to protect that for future generations ahead. People are going to come to our state. They're going to want to live here. Businesses are going to want to live here because we do have that water. So we have to take the long view. To have, you know, jobs for 15 or 20 years and devastate our environment is a bad move.
The tribes fought successfully against the proposed iron ore mine in the Pinoki Hills recently, and the Bad River Band, Sandy, argued against the Pinoki Hills mine in part because of possible water pollution and threats to the wild rice beds.
Oh, yep. I was one of the ones on the front line there. We can't take that risk. We can't risk our entire livelihood and our children's livelihood for a quick buck. And any of these people arguing $85,000 a year jobs, well, let them drink that water from Stream C. See how long they last.
Well, the Mole Lake Band also fought successfully against a sulfide mine in Crandon. John Greendeer, will there ever be a mining project in Wisconsin that the tribes will accept? It seems like you folks oppose all of them.
Well, I hope not. I hope we don't come to that age, and I hope we actually start thinking about considering moving away from this antiquated, well, they call it technology, but it isn't, and start moving toward more sustainable living practices. And so I really believe that is the direction that we need to go. And Sandy's absolutely right, and she has been at the front line, and I've seen her many times holding her children and doing everything. And we've been, you know, at first they said we weren't saying anything, and we were. We started showing up and saying something, and that wasn't good enough. Then we filed our concerns because they said we weren't bringing anything on paper, and then they didn't read them. Sooner or later, we showed them the laws that protect us, and they either changed them or they completely disregarded them. And then, you know, then they said we were lying. And then we brought in science and we showed them scientifically and factually that this is exactly what's occurring. We were way out of our tree in this element, and they decided to get rid of the scientists that protect us. And so, you know,
you're talking about the DNR,
yeah, the DNR
cutbacks.
And I really believe that, you know, what we're doing, as you know, Sandy had explained, you know, when you hear things like the stream that's up there, they don't have it. And even when they can't prove they don't have it, they're just going to go ahead and do it anyway. So it's really important that this is as much about a issue of democracy as it is about an environmental issue, and where our actual legislators, the people that we represent us, are taking this state. So I think we have two elements coursing the wrong direction, and it's up for the silent people to not be silent anymore and say something.
One of the keynote speakers at this upcoming summit, the New People Summit, is Paul DeMaine. He's the CEO of Indian Country Communications and a member of the Lacouture Band of Ojibwe. DeMaine also ran for state senate a couple of years ago in the 29th district. He'll be speaking at the summit on the subject of food sovereignty versus food suicide. We asked him about that and about his impressions of the upcoming New People Environmental Summit.
Well, I just simply look forward to the conversation. I think it's kind of exciting to get together with people, I think, that are what I consider to be forward-looking in regards to impacts to the environment, protection of the waters, self-sufficiency, and I think we got that in regards to all the people that are coming in. I'm talking a little bit about food sovereignty versus food suicide, and by that I simply mean that we have a choice of looking at our communities and growing our own food and surviving on that food as we would have 100 years ago and 50 years ago when everyone had guards, 100 years ago when we were organized in traditional societies and food and gathering was within a 60-mile radius, and 50 years ago when most communities in northern Wisconsin, as you rolled through them, would have had vast gardens and people were used to canning their own food, as compared today where we have so much prepared food. You know, it's almost like our children know how to warm up food. That's their cooking skills. You go to Walmart, you buy something in a box, you bring it home, you put it in a microwave and warm it up. And we don't know where our food is coming from on the at this level nowadays, in which so much of our food is shipped in from outside sources. Some of it comes thousands of miles. We don't know if it's been sprayed with pesticides. We don't know how it's been preserved. We don't know how healthy it is, whether all the nutritional value has been stripped out of it. So getting back to the idea that we can grow our own corn, beans, and squash, we can have our own gardens, there's lots of things to harvest nearby in the woods that are available on a regular basis for salads and nutritional values and things that our body needs, we need to go in that direction, because the other direction ends up getting us into the hospital. It gets us heart attacks and strokes and diabetes and other diseases that are very, very expensive to take care of, I think, with an ounce of prevention by better eating habits and looking local for our food sources really behooves us in the long run.
That's Paul DeMaine, CEO and Managing Editor of Indian Country Communications, one of the speakers at the New People Environmental Summit, October 14th at the Ho-Chunk Banquet Center in Nakusa. Sandy Gokey, your reaction to what you just heard Paul DeMaine say?
Well, he is one of my mentors, whether he likes it or not. So a lot of the things that I know come from him, and he's taught me a lot about looking in the woods, for our food, and food sovereignty is absolutely necessary. If we want to call ourselves sovereign nations as tribal people, then we need to be able to feed ourselves.
If John Greendeer, if you go to any Walmart, you'll find the parking lot absolutely full. The stores are full. People like the convenience food. They even like the junk food. How are you going to change those habits?
Right. This is a lifestyle change, of course. And I think, you know, for any of the today's struggling parents, I often say we almost have to have two jobs just to be broke. We got a central location. We got things that are, you know, relatively inexpensive, and you can do the one-shot wonder because, you know, when we got our days are so full. And so what we actually have been doing, and not talking about it, we actually have following in Paul's lead in organic gardening. The nation actually just began an agricultural division, soon to be its own department, on sustainable food sources. We're teaching people how to grow food. And it isn't even that. I really believe, and this happened to me, that once you start planting things and you start developing a connection to what it is you're doing, it really becomes your babies, your lifestyle. And I can assure you, if we can just promote this, people will find that the food that you grow and harvest yourself tastes better, and you can live longer and fuller lives. And it's as much marketing and you know, curbing people toward this and reintroducing what I call eat indigenously, those little aspects into your daily life. And I, you know, nobody wants that on switch where you start changing everything over and you try to eat really healthy in 1 week. We're looking at transitional dieting and things like that. And this is where Paul DeMaine really leads the charge on, and folks like him.
And David Gorski, people also like being able to get fresh vegetables year-round. They don't care if they're being shipped in from South America during December and January. What's wrong with that?
Well, I'll just talk about myself and one of the ideas of the summit. And I no longer fertilize my lawn. All my neighbors, I'm like in a little desert in my neighborhood when it gets dry. My neighbors fertilize their lawn four times a year. Then they got to put the herbicides, they put the insecticides on it. And I'm eliminating my lawn. I'm going from landscaping to foodscaping. I probably grew 400 pounds of tomatoes, which I processed, ancient squash seeds, which I got through Paul Demain, and a lot of other vegetables. And what I hope the summit does is challenge people to change their mindset. You do not have to have the perfect one-species lawn. Don't kill all the dandelions because, you know, it's one of the first foods that our pollinators eat in the spring. You know, you can still have a nice-looking backyard without putting more chemicals on it than the average farmer.
Many cities have local ordinances preventing people from turning a lawn into a farming project. The rules call for cut grass and manicured lawns.
Well, I really think that we have to change that paradigm. I think we need to move in that direction, and that is a lot about what the summit's about. We are pushing the envelope in this summit. We want people to look forward for seven generations. What you've got a little piece of land, you got a quarter acre. Really, what can you do with it? You can plant deep-rooted plants that actually purify the groundwater as it's moving through the soil. You can plant things that help our pollinators. Our pollinators have been under stress because the neonicotinoids are killing hives. So even if you have a little piece of land, you can make a difference in the environment.
We're talking about the New People Environmental Summit, October 14th, Ho-Chunk Banquet Center in Nakusa, with David Gorski of Clean Green Action of Wisconsin Rapids, John Greendeer of the Ho-Chunk Nation Department of Heritage Preservation, and Sandy Goki, a teacher with the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. I'm Glenn Moberg. We've got time to squeeze a phone call in. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. We're going to take a short break. Here's Buffy St. Marie of the Cree First Nation of Saskatchewan, Canada.
Love lift us up where we belong, where the eagles cry on a mountain high. Love lift us up where we belong, far from the worlds we know, up where the clear winds blow.
Support for WPR comes from the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo, Wisconsin, celebrating Member Appreciation Day, Saturday, September 23rd, an event for current and future members. More at savingcranes.org.
Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollop, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollop, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Hey, farmer, put away your DDT. I don't care about spots on my apples. Leave me the birds and the bees. Please, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? The bee paradise, put up a fucking lie.
Counting Crows with their version of Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi, taking us into our final segment of Route 51. As we talk about the New People Environmental Summit, October 14th at the Ho-Chunk Banquet Center in Nakusa, with David Gorski of Clean Green Action of Wisconsin Rapids, John Greendeer of the Ho-Chunk Nation, and Sandy Goki of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Let's talk about climate change. The federal EPA and the Wisconsin DNR have scrubbed references to man-made climate change from their websites. President Trump says he will pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accords. And John Greendeer, meanwhile, we have had three Category 4 and Category 5 hurricanes in the last couple of weeks, causing major devastation. And many people say those hurricanes are happening at such intensity because the ocean water is so warm because of climate change.
Absolutely. I think there's – I can't believe not everybody is to that point where we cannot – recognize what is actually happening in our Great Lakes and our oceans, our climates, our clouds, you know. And I think when we realize how much of an impact we have globally, we have to start making some of those big changes. And it really does mean, again, changing lifestyles and not following what the consumers and the people want, it's what we should do. And so that's where I really feel that making sense, using science, making small changes that we can curb ourselves back. We had blackouts that had severe impacts on our carbon footprint and showed us very vividly that we do contribute greatly to our climate.
And Sandy, in Wisconsin, in your neck of the woods, we had massive flooding caused by torrential rains last summer, washing out parts of Highway 2 up north and destroying Saxon Harbor, which still hasn't been rebuilt.
Yeah, and I hope they don't. Yeah, my kids and I actually got stuck near Marengo for 3 days because of the flood and all the washout. I was about 7 months pregnant with my daughter. And, you know, it's just because you stick your head in the sand and don't want to believe it's true doesn't make it go away.
Yeah, one of the people who's involved with the summit is Art Shigoni of the Menominee and Potawatomi tribes. He describes himself as a Native American ambassador. Here's what he had to say.
In my tradition, when the water turns to poison and you can no longer eat the fish, a new people will emerge. The people will have two choices. One road is a future of destruction and greed, and the other is peace road that leads to spirituality and reverence for all living things. And a united people can emerge. So I think that we have to take a real look at this before, you know, we can't do it anymore.
Do you feel often frustrated having this perspective with everything that's going on in the world around us right now? It can seem hopeless at times.
I don't think it seems hopeless. I think that there are things that we can do, and I think that if to these people that we do have in office that are trying to do these things as people, we need to make sure we get out and vote, and we can vote some of these turkeys out of their office, bring it back to the way it used to be by voting, you know, and I think that that's one of the biggest things is that people are so frustrated, but they don't realize that voting really does count, you know. So if we can get more of these people out there to vote, we can change a lot of these things that are happening.
David Gorski, you've run for political office before. How do you respond to people who say the deck is stacked against Native Americans and people who support the environment because of gerrymandered districts, because of millions of dollars of dark money that roll into these campaigns? And even on a national level, the Electoral College keeps the winner of the popular vote from becoming president. How do you convince people to vote when they think their vote can't possibly make a difference?
Well, I think, Glenn, you're talking about attacks on democracy. When the elected officials pick their voters, I don't really think that's democracy. I don't think money is free speech. I don't think corporations are people. I wish that we could overturn Citizens United. You know, as a candidate for an assembly seat, I think if we were funded $25,000 by public money and that's it, I think that would be enough. I'm running to support democracy. I really feel like democracy's gone backwards.
John Greendeer, do you ever feel like you're tilting at windmills? You're going against the grain here of society.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have to. And actually, whether or not the deck is stacked doesn't mean you stop trying. It doesn't. If that was the case, I probably wouldn't be here. Our ancestors really put up a lot more than what I have today. So for me to get here and my family. So these are real people out here, and I really think that this is making sure that a voice is heard and recognized.
Sandy Gokey, you've got 15 seconds for the last word here.
All right. Well, I want to take it a step further than just voting. I think people should get out and take action themselves to be able to change this world. Sorry, that was my kid.
All right, we've got it. We are completely out of time. And thank you all for being with us today.
Thank you for having us. Once there were parking lots, now it's a peaceful oasis. You got it. This was a Pizza Hut, now it's all covered with daisies.
things fell apart. Nobody paid much attention. You got it, you got it.
We want to thank today's guests, New People Environmental Summit organizer David Gorski of Clean Green Action of Wisconsin Rapids, John Greendeer, president of the Ho-Chunk Nation Department of Heritage Preservation, and Sandy Gokey, a teacher with the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Thanks also to Kim Wright of Midwest Environmental Advocates, Paul DeMaine of Indian Country Communications, and Art Shigoni for their contributions to this program. The New People Environmental Summit takes place October 14th at the Ho-Chunk Casino Banquet Center in Nakusa. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by the Ho-Chunk Dancers, Bill Miller, Joe Walsh, Wade Fernandez, Buffy St. Marie, Counting Crows, and the Talking Heads. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.